Why do the evil prey on the least of these? Why do our leaders not heed the cries of those in need? Why does evil seem to be defeating good? And where are you, O God? Why do you stand far off? Yet the words of the Psalter remind us that this battle for good versus evil is not new.
That's the Reverend Dr. Lisa Goods, and today she brings you a powerful sermon called How Long? I'm Peter Wallace. It's day one.
Welcome to Day One, the weekly program that brings you outstanding preachers from America's historic Protestant churches, sharing insight and inspiration from God's Word for your life. Now to introduce this week's preacher, here's our host, Peter Wallace.
Thank you, Sherry. Today on Day One, we're honored to have with us the Reverend Dr. Lisa M. Goods, Senior Pastor of Shiloh Baptist Church of Cleveland, Ohio. Lisa is a graduate of Penn State University and after college had a successful 26-year career in sales and management. She later earned her Master of Divinity from McCormick Theological Seminary in Chicago, earning the Jesse Hasley Imagination in Preaching Award in 2007, and the seminary's highest preaching honor, the James Taylor Preaching Award, in both 2008 and 2009. She earned her Doctor of Ministry from Chicago Theological Seminary and is pursuing a Ph.D. in African American Preaching at Christian Theological Seminary in Indianapolis. Lisa was ordained by the United Church of Christ in 2011 and served as Associate Pastor of Covenant United Church of Christ in South Holland, Illinois, for over 11 years. Lisa, welcome to Day One.
Thank you, Peter. It's such an honor to be here with you today.
You've had an amazing ministry career so far, and it's taken you to Shiloh Baptist Church in Cleveland, where you now serve. Tell us about your church. What was it that drew you to accept their call as the first female pastor in the church's 172-year history?
Well, Peter, it really was a whole confluence of different circumstances. Mm-hmm. I was finishing up a chaplain residency in the midst of the pandemic. Mm. I was seeking God's call to a new parish. My desires were to go someplace sunny and warm. but in a twist of events, I got an email from Shiloh Baptist Church saying, would you please consider our church? We have seen your profile on the American Baptist website, and mm-hmm. we would like to speak with you. I thought, first of all, from the looks of the application, that they were way too conservative for me. I thought I did not want to go to Cleveland. I thought, this church has never had a female pastor, and I've been through that before. I don't want to do that again. But the Spirit kept telling me to fill out the application. And my son and I, who are very close, my then 23-year-old son, said, Mom, I'll just do it. Just do it. They're probably not going to call you, but just do it. And so I did it. I filled out the application. They called me. They kept calling me. And every time I thought they didn't like that answer, I saw the look on their faces, and this is a Zoom interview, they kept calling back. And then we were doing virtual church at that time. Mm-hmm. And so they needed someone to do pulpit supply. And so I said, well, you know, I'll preach for you for a few weeks if that's helpful. And during that time, I am told that folks who were not in favor of having a woman pastor fell in love with me and my preaching. And so things finally opened up and they called and they voted to call me. And I still was not certain about coming to Cleveland, but the Spirit said to go. And the people were just so warm and friendly. And I just truly felt the Spirit of God and have continued to feel the Spirit of God at Shiloh Baptist Church and here in Cleveland.
So what is your church up to in your Cleveland community?
Well, Shiloh has a long history of work in the community. Shiloh was actually birthed out of the African-American community's need for justice. And so they have always worked for justice. They were active in the Huff riots and have had a soup kitchen for many years. And so during the pandemic, we shifted our soup kitchen ministry to a food box program that we distributed groceries. Many of our folks who were doing the cooking were also the vulnerable in the community. And so we shifted towards that model. We did a very large farmers to family in cooperation with the FDA and gave out over 2,200 boxes of food in one day, and then began to do this and partner with local corporations to do this on a regular basis. Then we began to, as the pandemic eased up, to do to-go meals for those who were both food insecure and housing insecure, to have meals, hot meals to go. And so we have been doing that. We have also been very, very active in the COVID-19 vaccination as well as testing. We are a part of the Greater Cleveland Congregations, with whom we tested for the first time, giving incentives, cash incentives to people to get vaccinated. Our zip code is the most vulnerable and the lowest vaccinated rate in the city of Cleveland. About 30% of persons were vaccinated just a few months ago in our zip code, and of them, African-Americans were only about 12%, which is the majority of this community. And so when we started giving these cash incentives, we had lines around the corner of people coming. These are people who were selling their blood at blood banks to pay for groceries, to pay for electricity. People who were trying to get internet service so that their kids could homeschool. And so when we were able to partner and get these cash incentives, it really just changed the game. And we've been lauded by the mayor for the work that we've been able to do that none of even the large hospital systems were not able to do in this community.
So, Lisa, you earned a bachelor's in finance from Penn State and had a successful career for 26 years, and then something happened. How did you experience the call to ministry?
Wow, I have always been this church girl involved in music ministry, worship ministry, Sunday school, teaching, helping youth. And so folks that know me say I've always had this call. However, I did not recognize it until I was going through a time of transition. I had moved to Chicago for a position and it did not turn out the way it was supposed to. My son was going through challenges. I was a single mother and my grandmother, who I loved dearly, was dying. And so in that despair, God began to speak to me. And God said that I will deliver you, but I want you to speak for me. My response was, what? What? Who are you talking to? You know, really? And but the Spirit would not let it go until I answered the call. I even went to visit a local seminaries, but never filled out the application. And finally, one night in tears and lament to God, I had lost my job and I couldn't find a job at McDonald's. I couldn't find a job anywhere. but God spoke to me and said, do what I say. And so I filled out the application, and the next day calls began to come. Not only did calls come, but I got a job that paid for me to do my degree, and I got tuition reimbursement, and they paid 100% for my Master's of Divinity degree.
And in seminary, you were an award-winning preacher, 3 times, in fact. What's your approach to preaching, and has it changed in recent years in any way?
I don't know that my approach has changed more than my recognition of why I preach the way I do. I do believe that I preach through a womanist lens, out of my own experience of race, sex, and class oppression. And so that really draws me to a prophetic preaching that addresses the marginalization of any of God's people. So I really do kind of see in the text where people are disenfranchised and really try to use that to uplift God's people. I think my experience with chaplaincy has tweaked that some with the ways in which I also look at where people are traumatized and how we address that in our preaching as well.
You've already earned a Doctor of Ministry degree, and you're currently pursuing a PhD at Christian Theological Seminary on African-American preaching and sacred rhetoric under the mentorship of Dr. Frank Thomas. What are you focusing on in your research?
My research is surrounding the prophetic preaching of African-American women pastors. As we see all over our world, this is a shift where women are rising in power all over our country, and the church is no different. We see a proliferation of women pastors, particularly the African-American church, that has been slower to receive women as and pastors. But now we see that rise. And I think it's important to study the voices of these women. We have studies of all the great preachers throughout time, but very little on what we have done as women. And at this time, as I talked about that womanist lens and how we have these intersecting oppressions, I think we speak to a number of populations in our society, and it's important to document that and also systematize it so that others can follow that lead as a model of preaching.
You served as Associate Pastor of Outreach and Communications for over 11 years at Covenant UCC in South Holland, Illinois, a church our mutual friend and wonderful preacher Ozzie Smith Jr. founded and led for many years before his retirement. Ozzie's preached numerous times on Day One, but what did you learn about pastoring and preaching from Ozzie?
Wow, I learned so much from, as I affectionately call him, Reverend Ozzie. He is my father in ministry. He recognized my gift to preach when I was trying to hide in the background. but I learned to recognize and support the gifts of others. Pastor Ozzie is such a good pastor at not being so hands-on, not being a micromanager, but allowing you to follow your passion. So if you come with an idea, he will tell you to run with it. If you need some guidance, he will guide you, but he allows you to use your passions. And I think when you allow both lay leaders and ministers in your charge to follow their giftedness, not only do they blossom, but their gifts make room for them, not just for them, but for the congregation. And that's what I've seen with the ministers that I have worked with as a pastor. And that's what Pastor Ozzie instilled in me.
Well, your sermon today draws from Psalm 10, the psalm appointed for this Sunday from Will Gaffney's A Women's Lectionary for the Whole Church, and we'll hear its lament in your sermon, which you've titled, How Long? Lisa, thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much, Peter. It indeed was a pleasure to be here. I have heard Day One for many years, and so it's an honor to be in this platform with you.
This is Peter Wallace. As you enjoy summer vacation season, take Day One with you wherever you go. Listen on a radio program near you or subscribe to Day One Weekly Program on your podcast app. But don't forget, we need your financial support to keep proclaiming God's good news season after season. Please mail your gift to Day One, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia, 30305. Or call us at 404-815-9110. Or give securely online at dayone.org. The Day One Ministry needs your support so we can keep sharing God's hope and love through the powerful preaching of God's Word. Thank you, and God bless you.
Virginia Tech, Northern Illinois University, Columbine High School in Colorado, Santa Fe High School in Texas, Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida, Oxford High School in Michigan, an Amish school in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Sandy Hook Elementary in Connecticut, and 19 babies and 2 teachers at Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas. The Psalter cries, "Why, O Lord, do you stand afar off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? Meanwhile, in their arrogance, the wicked man hunts down the weak. They are caught in the schemes of his devices." The Aurora Theater in Colorado, Walmart in El Paso and in Denver, the Pulse nightclub in Florida, a music festival in Las Vegas, FedEx warehouse in Indianapolis, a massage parlor in Atlanta, and 10 innocent black bodies, mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, essential workers, and senior citizens at a Tops grocery store in Buffalo. And the Psalter cries, "The wicked wait in a place perfect for ambush. From their hiding places, they kill innocent people. Their eyes spot those who are helpless. They lie in ambush in secret places, like a lion in its lair." Mother Emanuel AME in Charleston, South Carolina, a Sikh temple in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, Living Church of God in Brookfield, Wisconsin, First Baptist Church in Sutherland, Texas, Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and the Irwin Taiwanese Presbyterian Church in Laguna, California. And the Psalter cries, "Their helpless victims are crushed. They collapse, falling prey to the strength of the wicked. We mourn. We cry. We carry balloons, teddy bears, and flowers to makeshift memorials. We listen to speeches, we march, we protest, and we cry out to our leaders for action. But action does not come. Change seems afar off, if ever." And the Psalter cries, "Their ways are always twisted. Your rules are too lofty for them. They snort at all their foes. They think to themselves, we'll never stumble, we'll never encounter resistance. Their mouths are filled with curses, dishonesty, and violence. Under their tongues lie troublemaking and wrongdoing." In our time of immense communal grief, anguish, and despair, the words of Psalm 10 from this week's women's lectionary give voice to our sentiment as a people traumatized by the demonstrations of evil in this world. Poetically, they express our innermost thoughts. Why do the evil prey on the least of these? Why do our leaders not heed the cries of those in need? Why does evil seem to be defeating good? And where are you, O God? Why do you stand far off? Yet the words of the Psalter remind us that this battle for good versus evil, this fight for justice, this challenging of the empire, and this mourning of the least, the left out, and the lost, those lost too soon, lost violently, and lost to the evils of this world, this battle is not new. The names have been changed, not necessarily to protect the innocent, just changed. This is a psalm of lament believed to have been possibly written during the exile or other time of conflict in Israel. Maybe it is the cry of women left to bury their husbands and sons, brothers and fathers. And while this psalm begins with a cry to God, it does not blame God for Israel's present predicament. This psalm of lament places the blame squarely on human action. In an interesting twist, the marginalized rise up and specifically call out those with power and control who perpetrate or facilitate the evil. They challenge the systems of oppression that enable systemic abuse of the poor and those who have been othered in their society. In the midst of their grief, the voiceless now dare to raise their voices. They dare to speak for themselves, and the power of their lament gives hope to those who mourn the evil injustices we face in our present age. Biblical scholars note that Psalm 9 and 10 were actually one contiguous psalm. It begins with praise and thanksgiving to God for victory over the enemy in Psalm 9, and then turns to a lament that calls out the evil deeds and arrogant thoughts of those who perpetrate evil in chapter 10. Yet even in lament, the psalmist affirms hope in God's power to deliver. In a lyric of trust, the psalmist declares, "Why do the wicked reject God? Why do they think to themselves that you won't find out? But you do see. You do see troublemaking and grief, and you do something about it. The helpless leave it all to you. You are the orphan's helper." God is the helper of the orphan, those who are helpless and hopeless, those who are least and the lost, orphaned and othered, those who are rejected and reviled, those who are discriminated and disregarded. God does see, and God will help. This is the hope of the psalmist in Psalm 10, and this is the confirmation of hope in this week's lectionary epistle from Romans 8. What then shall we say in response to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? He who did not spare his only son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things? Oh, God does see, and God will help. But like the psalmist, we must use our voices to speak out against injustice, hate, and evil. God delivered Israel when Moses refused to give up but continued to say, "Let my people go." That memory empowered the psalmist to speak, and we must use our voices to continually and consistently speak out against racism, sexism, classism, xenophobia, homophobia, and all other types of evil. We must use our voices until we have sensible gun legislation and proper mental health care for all. This psalm calls us to use our lament as a catalyst to action and trust in God. This psalm reminds us that God's actions and our actions need not be mutually exclusive. In the midst of our grief, we must draw on our collective memory of what God has done in the past and remember that if God did it before, God can and will do it again. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in the time of trouble. And God promised never to leave us nor forsake us. God does see, and God will help. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall trouble or hardship or persecution or famine or nakedness or danger or sword? No, in all these things, we are more than conquerors through him who loves us. As we grieve and ask, how long must we endure this violence? How long will our children be gunned down? How long will our leaders lament but not listen, lecture but not legislate? The words of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. come to mind. How long? Not long. Because truth crushed to the earth will rise again. How long? Not long. Because no lie can live forever. How long? Not long. Because you shall reap what you sow. How long? Not long. Because the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. In the midst of our tears, we have hope because God does see. And God has given us the power to make a difference in our voices. This is the word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
You've been listening to the Reverend Dr. Lisa M. Goods, Senior Pastor of Shiloh Baptist Church in Cleveland, Ohio. For a free transcript of her sermon today titled, How Long? Call us at 404-815-9110. That's 404-815-9110. Or write to us at Day 1, 2715 Peachtree Road, Atlanta, Georgia 30305. Keep in mind that Day One depends on the financial offerings of our faithful listeners. We're grateful for your help. I'm Peter Wallace. Next week on Day One, we're honored to have with us the Reverend Jasmine Smothers, lead pastor of First United Methodist Church in Atlanta, Georgia. Her sermon is called, When My Faith Is Not Enough. Be sure to join us next time on Day One. Now, our Day One preacher, Lisa Goods, offers some final thoughts on her message today, How Long? And Lisa, the tragic litany of violent deaths in our society today echoes in our breaking hearts. And with the psalmist, we cry out, Why, O Lord, do you stand far off? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? It does seem that way too often, but what does it tell us that the Psalter can be so brutally honest with God? Does that mean we can be honest in our prayers as well?
I definitely think that it calls us to be honest in our prayers. Mm-hmm. So often we just say we're fine, but we're not fine. Someone says, how are you, Peter? You say, oh, I'm fine. I'm okay. But we're not okay. Particularly after 2.5 years of a pandemic, over 1 million people dying, and all of these violent tragedies, there's no way we can be okay. Mm-hmm. And so to speak truth, God honors truth. And I think this particular Psalter then comes back after this truth is spoken and says, God does see. And that is our hope. That even as we grieve and we don't feel God, that God does see and God will help.
Mm-hmm. And you said while the psalm begins with a cry to God, it does not blame God for the present predicament. The blame is placed squarely on human action. But the marginalized, you said, rise up and call out those with power and control who perpetrate or facilitate the evil. They challenge the systems of oppression that enable systemic abuse of the poor and those who have been othered in society. And the power of their lament gives hope to those of us who mourn the evil injustices in our present age, you said. How can we follow the psalmist's example in productive ways?
I think what we can do is continue to call out the systems of oppression as we see them and those who perpetrate them or those who sustain them in our society. What is interesting in this text is, in general, in that context, the marginalized did not speak. Mm. But in this text, they put words in the mouths of those who are the oppressor. Mm-hmm. Usually, the oppressor had the upper hand and did all the speaking. But they say, you have said there is no God. You have said all of these things. And so they call out their actions and the ideology that underlies their actions. Mm. And in that, they take agency and they take back their power. And I think that's what we need to do in our present age. While we lament whether it is our political leaders or it is the violence and the mental illness and all of the things that are coming together to create these events, we need to call out specifically those causes. In medicine, I'll use this example, we can try to treat a disease. But if we do not look at the etiology, the underlying cause, we can never cure it, and we can't even prevent it. And so I think we have to take that approach where we call out those systems, we're looking at what the causes are, so that we can come up with a cure, with a solution.
Mm. Lisa, what's one thing from your sermon today that you hope our listeners will carry with them in the days ahead?
I hope that they have a voice, that their voice does matter, and that God has called us and even expects us to use our voice. And when we do that, God will come to our aid. We don't serve a God that is pushy or overriding and just comes and poof does things in spite of us. God does things because of us, because of our cries, because of our work towards justice. When Jesus said, and he quoted Isaiah, that the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, I believe the Spirit of the Lord is upon each of us and has called us to open the eyes of the blind, to heal those who are hurting, to set the captive free. And so I just hope that people will take from this sermon that they have the power, and the power is in their voice, and when they use it, God will help.
Lisa Goods, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much, Peter.
Day One is the voice of America's mainline Protestant churches. Visit us online at dayone.org. Our program is recorded and edited by Donald Jones and produced by Peter Wallace. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sherry Miller, wishing you all God's blessings on Day One and forever.